Hi. So today we will be discussing about SGLT2 inhibitors and their role in heart failure. So the treatment of heart failure has dramatically evolved over the last few decades. 30 years ago, we had only digoxin and diuretics for the treatment of heart failure. Recent advances in the field of heart failure have completely changed the game. We have beta blockers, we have new drugs like ARNI, mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist, and now we have SGLT2 inhibitors. Makes SGLT2 inhibitors special anti-heart failure drugs? Let's find out. Diabetes and heart failure. What we know from various studies is that diabetes increases the risk of heart failure by 2 to 2.5 times. The Framingham Heart Study had suggested that diabetes increased the risk of heart failure by 2 times in males and by 5 times in females. There are multiple mechanisms by which this occurs. We'll discuss some of these mechanisms here and some in a separate review on diabetic cardiomyopathy. Why did we need new antidiabetics? A decade ago, we had many antidiabetics that were lowering the blood glucose levels. It was found that though some of these drugs lowered the blood glucose level, they increase the cardiovascular mortality. For example, thiazolidinediones or the glitazones. They increase sodium and water retention. Studies have found a 42% increase risk of incidental heart failure with pioglitazone. A meta-analysis reported an increased risk of MI with rosiglitazone. Although DPP-4 inhibitors are considered cardiovascular neutral drugs, but saxagliptin was one DPP-4 inhibitor which was found to be associated with 27% increase in hospitalization for heart failure and 22% increase in cardiovascular mortality. Some of these drugs have been abandoned. Some are not used nowadays. Some of these are still used in certain situations. For example, we still see patients using pioglitazone in some cases. Insulin also has been found to be associated with increased risk of heart failure hospitalizations. However, this does not hold true for insulin, diglutec and glargine. These two drugs have been tested in two large randomized controlled trials and have been found to have a neutral effect on cardiovascular outcomes. The landmark EMPA-REG outcome trial found that patients in the empagliflozin group compared to the placebo had significantly lower risk of heart failure hospitalizations. The result sparked a new debate that can SGLT2 inhibitor be used as an anti-heart failure drug. Subsequent trials in the next 5 to 6 years showed us that this group is an effective heart failure medicine. So before knowing about SGLT2 inhibitors, we should know what SGLT receptors are. There are 3 main types of glucose transporters in the body, which include GLUT, SGLT and SWEET. GLUT are ubiquitous and they are responsible for facultative diffusion of glucose along its concentration gradient. SGLTs are primarily expressed in intestine and in renal cortex and they transport glucose against its concentration gradient. This is an active process. It requires energy. Sodium is co-transported from the channel. 2 types of SGLT2 receptor proteins, that is SGLT2 and SGLT1, are of clinical relevance. There are a total 6 types which are known, and these 2 are of clinical relevance. SGLT2 is present on the proximal convoluted tubule, and SGLT1 is present on distal part of the proximal convoluted tubule and enterocytes of small intestine. SGLT2 is responsible for the reabsorption of 90% of glucose from the proximal convoluted tubule, while rest of it is reabsorbed from the distal PCT by SGLT1. The glycosuric action of the SGLT2 inhibitors is a novel mechanism by which blood sugar levels are taken down by this group of drug, and it is novel in the sense it does not influence the insulin or the incretin pathway. So we already know that SGLT2 inhibitors are beneficial in patients with heart failure. How does this happen? There are multiple mechanisms which have been proposed by which it has been hypothesized that these drugs may be beneficial. They include natriuresis, glycosuria, osmotic diuresis, improvement in glycemic control, antihypertensive effect, weight reduction, increased RBC mass, adipokine regulation, neurohormonal effects, and direct cardiac effects. We'll talk about glycosuria and osmotic diuresis first. SGLT2 inhibitors, they prevent glucose reabsorption from the proximal convoluted tubule of nephron. This causes glycosuria and consequent osmotic diuresis. This glycosuria is responsible for the anti-diabetic action of this group of drugs. The osmotic diuresis provides some decongestion to the lungs and may be one of the mechanisms by which this drug is helpful to the heart failure patients. However, this glycosuria and osmotic diuresis are seen only in patients with hyperglycemia, and benefits in non-diabetics cannot be explained by this mechanism alone. Put it simply, SGLT2 inhibitors are not simply another diuretic. SGLT2 inhibitors are also responsible for natriuresis. They cause the elimination of sodium from the body. This may be one of the mechanisms by which they provide benefits in the patient with heart failure. But what we have seen from the randomized controlled trial is that, for example, in DAPA-HF, there was no change in diuretic dose in most of the patients. In another trial, that was DEFINE-HF trial, there was no effect on NT-proBNP levels in the patients who are on dapagliflozin. However, there was improvement in the heart failure status in these patients. Also, it can be noted from the DAPA-HF data that the volume depletion between the two groups of dapagliflozin and the placebo was not statistically different from each other. The SGLT2 inhibitors had not caused much of volume depletion. So the diuretic action of SGLT2 inhibitors is different from that of the loop diuretics. SGLT2 inhibitors cause depletion of interstitial fluid and they do not decrease the plasma volume. However, loop diuretics, they decrease both the interstitial fluid as well as the plasma volume. How do we know this? We know this from the results of RECEDE-CHF trial. In the RECEDE-CHF trial, it was found that empagliflozin increased total urinary volume without increasing urinary sodium. There were no changes in the markers of intravascular volume change, that is blood urea, hematocrit, and systolic blood pressure. Antihypertensive effect. This could be one of the mechanisms by which SGLT2 inhibitors have been benefiting the patients with heart failure. However, the antihypertensive effect is only modest. That is, only 2.5 by 1.5 mmHg blood pressure reduction is offered by these drugs. It was believed that the antihypertensive effect of these drugs is because of its natriuretic and diuretic action. However, this antihypertensive effect is persistent even in advanced CKD, when the patient is not pouring enough amount of urine, implying that SGLT2 inhibitors are more than a diuretic. The possible mechanisms by which they have been lowering down the blood pressure may include improved endothelial functions, decreased arterial stiffness, and decreased sympathetic nervous system activity. Weight loss can be one mechanism by which patients with heart failure are benefited. However, it is to be kept in mind that weight loss has been reported in patients with diabetes, and some studies have reported weight loss to be present in patients with pre-diabetes. There is no evidence that SGLT2 inhibitors in patients without diabetes causes weight loss. So it does not explain the cardiovascular benefits in non-diabetic patients. Improved glycemic control, yes. Improved glycemic control may be one of the mechanisms by which SGLT2 inhibitors are benefiting the patients with heart failure, but this only explains their benefit in diabetic patients, and benefits in non-diabetic patients in heart failure cannot be explained by this mechanism only. Another possible mechanism by which they benefit the patients with heart failure includes increase in hematocrit. So the patients with type 2 diabetes mellitus, even with the normal kidney functions, have lower erythropoietin levels. Why does this happen? This is because SGLT2 mediated glucose reabsorption, this is an active process. This consumes a large amount of energy and a large amount of oxygen is consumed by the proximal convoluted tubule mitochondria, as a result of which there is lesser amount of oxygen which is available in the renal cortex, and there is selective damage to the proximal tubular epithelial cells. Erythropoietin producing fibroblasts, as a result of this stress, they transdifferentiate into myofibroblasts. So the erythropoietin level is low. What these SGLT2 inhibitors do is they inhibit SGLT2 mediated glucose reabsorption. Less ATPs are consumed, less oxygen is consumed, and as a result of which there is higher levels of renal erythropoietin, higher RBC mass, and higher hematocrit. One of the mechanisms which has been recently talked about a lot is the direct cardiac actions of the SGLT2 inhibitors. These actions include the regulation of ionic homeostasis, improved myocardial energetics, decreased cardiovascular oxidative stress, decreased inflammation associated with heart failure and diabetes, improved autophagy, inhibition of late sodium current in the heart. We'll talk about each of them separately. So to understand the regulation of ionic homeostasis by SGLT2 inhibitors, we have to first understand the interplay between type 2 diabetes mellitus and heart failure. Both these conditions are responsible for upregulation of sodium hydrogen exchanger 1 and 3. The distribution of sodium hydrogen exchanger 1 is ubiquitous. It is the predominant form in the heart. This channel regulates cardiomyocyte pH and volume and protects it against ischemic reperfusion injury. The NH3 isoform is present in the kidneys, where it is responsible for sodium reabsorption. Norepinephrine, angiotensin, and aldosterone, these are all increased in heart failure, and the insulin, glucose, and the certain adipokines, which are increased in type 2 diabetes mellitus, they stimulate the activity of NHE1, that is sodium hydrogen exchanger 1 in heart and blood vessels, and the activity of NHE3, sodium hydrogen exchanger 3 in the kidneys. Increased sodium hydrogen exchanger activity appears to play an important role in the pathophysiology of heart failure. Upregulation of NH3 isoform in the kidneys is a critical mediator of enhanced sodium reabsorption in the proximal convoluted tubule. This has been implicated in the pathogenesis of fluid retention and peripheral edema. This is responsible for resistance to diuretics and endogenous natriuretic peptides. The activity of cardiac NHE1 is markedly augmented in patients with heart failure. The rise in intracellular sodium after NHE1 activation leads to an increase in intracellular calcium levels. From our knowledge of pathology, we already know that anything which increases intracellular calcium level can predispose to cellular injury, and this is what which happens here. There is cardiomyocyte injury, cardiac fibrosis, and or cardiac hypertrophy. Upregulation of NHE1 may also contribute to the vascular abnormalities of diabetes mellitus. What these SGLT2 inhibitors do is they inhibit sodium hydrogen exchangers. They inhibit NHE1 in the heart and the vasculature, leading to a reduction in risk of cardiovascular death and reduction in heart failure hospitalizations. They also inhibit NHE3 in the kidneys, as a result of which there is inhibition of sodium reabsorption in the proximal convoluted tubule. There is natriuresis and lowering of blood pressure. Improved myocardial energetics. So this is another mechanism by which SGLT2 inhibitors are found to be beneficial in heart failure. Under the physiological conditions, nearly 90% of cardiac energy is derived from mitochondrial oxidative metabolism. And the fuel for the mitochondrial oxidative metabolism, it is derived from free fatty acids and glucose, and to a lesser extent from lactate, ketones, and amino acids. In type 2 diabetes mellitus or heart failure, there is dysregulated fatty acid oxidation. There is impaired glucose uptake or oxidation, which causes myocardial dysfunction. In the setting of restricted fuel selection and low energetic reserve, ketone bodies act as superfuels. They produce ATPs more efficiently than glucose or free fatty acids. What these SGLT2 inhibitors do is they increase the hepatic synthesis of these ketone bodies, and they decrease the urinary excretion of ketone bodies, as a result of which there is a state of hyperketonemia. These ketone bodies, especially beta hydroxybutyrate, this is taken up freely by the heart and the kidneys and oxidized in preference to fatty acids and glucose. This increases the cardiac efficiency, it reduces oxygen consumption, there was one reform trial. It was done with dapagliflozin. It showed that in patients with heart failure and type 2 diabetes mellitus, fasting ketones were higher in the patients who received dapagliflozin. Another molecule of interest is AMP activated protein kinase, or AMPK. So AMPK plays an important role in both heart failure and diabetes. In both of these conditions, AMPK is altered. What is AMPK? It is an energy sensor. It activates catabolic actions such as glycolysis and increased glucose uptake, and it impairs anabolic reactions. Under pathological conditions, AMPK in the heart is activated as a response to stress. What it does is, it mediates the transportation of GLUT4 from the cytosol to membrane, which causes increased glucose uptake in the heart as a cardioprotective mechanism. All these things are happening, increase the ATP production in the heart. In type 2 diabetes mellitus and in heart failure, the levels of AMPK is altered. What these SGLT2 inhibitors do is, they increase the level of AMPK, and this helps in the patients with heart failure. Besides SGLT2 inhibitors, metformin is another drug which increases the levels of AMPK. SGLT2 inhibitors also improve the autophagy. Autophagy or autophagy is a method by which unwanted proteins are removed by the cells. These proteins are delivered to the lysosomes for degradation. So autophagy decreases the reactive oxygen species or the ROS production, and it restores the mitochondrial function. Excessive autophagy is also bad. This can lead to cell death and deterioration of cardiac hypertrophy. What these SGLT2 inhibitors do is, they increase the autophagy and they help in removal of the unwanted proteins, and this is one of the mechanisms by which they help in patients with heart failure. The other direct actions of SGLT2 inhibitors on heart include decrease in the reactive oxygen species, decrease in the inflammation in heart, and inhibition of late sodium current. First, I'll talk about the reactive oxygen species. We already know that there is, in both heart failure and diabetes, there is increased oxidative stress. This leads to generation of more reactive oxygen species. These reactive oxygen species, what they can do is, they alter the functions of nearby proteins, and they can also cause endothelial dysfunction. So what these SGLT2 inhibitors do, they decrease the formation of these reactive oxygen species. And this has been confirmed in animal studies, where lower levels of reactive oxygen species have been reported after SGLT2 initiation. And SGLT2 inhibitors also decrease the inflammation in the heart, both heart failure and diabetes. They are characterized by a chronic state of low-grade inflammation. This may be a result of many things, such as cellular ionic dysregulation, reactive oxygen species production, and many things which we are going to talk about later. Why knowing about this inflammation is important in the understanding of heart failure is because inflammation can cause fibrosis, it can cause cell death and cardiac remodeling, and this can lead to progression of heart failure. The SGLT2 inhibitors have got direct anti-inflammatory action in the vascular cells, and they decrease the inflammation in heart failure and thereby help in stopping the progression of heart failure. Recently, empagliflozin was found to be a potent inhibitor of late sodium current in a mouse model of heart failure. The induction of this late component of the cardiac sodium current is involved in the etiology of heart failure, and this could be one of the mechanisms of benefit in heart failure by SGLT2 inhibitors. So we'll talk about each of these drugs and their current status. Firstly, the dapagliflozin. The DECLARE TIMI-58 trial, this was undertaken to establish the cardiovascular safety profile of the dapagliflozin. In this trial, more than 17,000 patients with multiple risk factors for atherosclerosis or established atherosclerotic cardiovascular diseases were included. And patients were followed up for a median 4.2 years. And the authors concluded that in patients with type 2 DM who were either at risk of atherosclerotic heart disease or had atherosclerotic heart disease, the dapagliflozin had neutral cardiovascular side effect profile, and it was found that it decreased the rate of heart failure hospitalizations This fueled a new hypothesis that dapagliflozin could be used as a heart failure drug. So to confirm this, DAPA-HF trial was conducted. DAPA-HF was a randomized controlled trial, and it was a placebo-controlled trial. Approximately 4,800 patients were included in this trial. These patients were of symptomatic heart failure with ejection fraction less than 40%. NT-proBNP in these patients was more than equal to 600, and patients were included irrespective of diabetic status. These patients could be in any functional class. Majority of the patients were in NYHA functional class 2, 67% were in NYHA functional class 2, 32% patients were in NYHA functional class 3, and less than 1% of the patients were in NYHA class 4. 45% in treatment and the placebo group had type 2 diabetes mellitus, that is 55% of the patients in both the groups were non-diabetic. Patients of type 1 diabetes mellitus, and if the eGFR was less than 30 ml per minute, they were excluded from the study. Baseline GDMT use, baseline guideline-directed medical therapy use, was comparable in both the groups. ARNI use, that is angiotensin receptor neprilysin inhibitor use, was low. It was somewhere between 10 to 11%. ACE inhibitors were used in approximately half of the patients, and ARB was used in close to one-fourth of the patients. 96% of the patients were on beta blockers and 70% of the patients were on mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist. All I want to say is they were on good GDMT. The median duration of follow-up was 18.2 months. The trial found that among patients with symptomatic heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, dapagliflozin was beneficial. Dapagliflozin reduced the primary composite of heart failure hospitalizations and cardiovascular death in these patients. Majority of this benefit was because of decrease in heart failure hospitalizations. Patients in NYHA functional class 3 or 4 appear to have less benefit than those in functional class 2. The number needed to treat to prevent one primary event was 21, and there were no adverse safety events. Then empagliflozin. So the EMPA-REG outcome trial was conducted to study the safety and efficacy of empagliflozin in type 2 diabetes mellitus patients. In this study, patients were randomly assigned to receive either 10 mg empagliflozin or 25 mg empagliflozin or a placebo once a day. A total of 7,200 patients of diabetes with established atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease. They were enrolled in this study and they were followed for a median period of 3.1 years. The trialist found that empagliflozin group had lower rate of death from cardiovascular causes and decreased heart failure hospitalizations. The author recommended that empagliflozin should be considered in patients with type 2 diabetes mellitus and all forms of atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease to reduce cardiovascular mortality and hospitalizations for heart failure. So then again, benefits in heart failure prompted the physicians to study its role in heart failure irrespective of the diabetic status of the patients. And this was the reason behind the EMPEROR-Reduced trial. The EMPEROR-Reduced trial was a multicentric, randomized, double-blinded, placebo-controlled trial, and it was conducted to assess the safety and efficacy of empagliflozin in patients with symptomatic heart failure with ejection fraction less than 40%, NT-proBNP more than 600, irrespective of diabetic status. These patients could be in any functional class. Majority of them were in NYHA functional class 2, that is 75% of the patients. Then NYHA 3 functional class patients were approximately 25% patients, and NYHA 4 functional class patients were only less than 1%. 50% of patients in the both study groups, that is empagliflozin as well as placebo, were diabetic. 50% were non-diabetic. 50% of patients had dilated cardiomyopathy as a cause of heart failure. 50% of patients had ischemic cardiomyopathy as a cause of heart failure. The patients were followed for a median 16 months, and trialists found that there was benefit of empagliflozin irrespective of diabetic status, and empagliflozin did decrease the heart failure hospitalizations in all the patients it was given. So there were some differences in the patients who were enrolled in EMPEROR-Reduced trial and DAPA-HF trial. The DAPA-HF trial enrolled the relatively more milder variety of heart failure, whereas EMPEROR-Reduced trial enrolled more sicker patients with heart failure. Two patient populations can be compared by their ejection fraction. The ejection mean ejection fraction in the patients of EMPEROR-Reduced trial was 27%, whereas it was 31% in the DAPA-HF trial. Consistent with the lower ejection fraction, there was higher use of CRT and ICD in the patients with EMPEROR-Reduced as compared to the DAPA-HF trial. Patients with EMPEROR-Reduced trial had higher NT-proBNP levels. Patients in the EMPEROR-Reduced trials had worse renal functions. EMPEROR-Reduced excluded the patients who were having eGFR of less than 20, whereas DAPA-HF excluded the patients who had eGFR of less than 30. The ARNI use in the DAPA-HF trial was approximately 10%, and ARNI use in EMPEROR-Reduced trial was 20%. After the landmark trials, DAPA-HF and the EMPEROR-Reduced, SGLT2 inhibitors found their place in the management of stable heart failure with or without diabetes. However, the safety and efficacy of these drugs after a recent episode of acute decompensation was still unknown. And this question was answered by this SOLOIST-WHF trial. This was a multicentric, double-blinded trial. It was done to study the safety and efficacy of sotagliflozin in reducing cardiovascular events in patients with type 2 diabetes mellitus and recent heart failure admissions. Two things were different here from the previous heart failure trials. Firstly, all the patients were diabetic in this study. And secondly, the patients had a recent admission for heart failure. This population of recent heart failure admission had not been studied previously in DAPA-HF or the EMPEROR-Reduced trials. So the trial enrolled 1,200 patients with heart failure, and when they were off oxygen, when they were stabilized, when they were transitioned to oral diuretics and had a BNP of more than 150 or NT-proBNP of more than 600, they were included in the trial. And patients were randomly assigned to receive sotagliflozin 400 milligrams once a day or a placebo. The patients were followed for a median period of 9 months. The median NT-proBNP level was 1,800 in both the groups. ARNI use was approximately 20% in both the groups, and close to 40% of patients were on ARBs, close to 40% patients were on ACE inhibitors, more than 60% patients were on mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist, more than 90% patients were on beta blockers. The trialists concluded that the primary endpoint of total CV death and heart failure hospitalizations was significantly lower with sotagliflozin than with placebo, and it was primarily due to decreased heart failure hospitalizations. The only drawback of this study was a shorter follow-up period. It was only 9 months, and it was because the trial had to be prematurely terminated because of lack of funding from the sponsor. This drug, sotagliflozin, was studied in another trial. It was SCORED trial. The trial aimed to assess safety and efficacy of sotagliflozin in reducing cardiovascular events among patients with type 2 diabetes mellitus and CKD. The pooled data from SCORED trial and SOLOIST trial showed that sotagliflozin reduced total heart failure hospitalizations and urgent heart failure visits. There was a new thing which came up, and this was a new side effect which had not been previously seen with patients on SGLT2 inhibitors. It was diarrhea, and it was believed that this was because of SGLT1 inhibition, which is also a property of this sotagliflozin in the GIT. Then canagliflozin. In 2018, results from the CANVAS trial were published in Circulation in an article which was titled "Canagliflozin in Heart Failure in Type 2 Diabetes Mellitus." The CANVAS program had enrolled more than 10,000 patients with type 2 diabetes mellitus and high cardiovascular risk. 15% of these patients, that is close to 1,500 patients in the study, had a history of heart failure. Compared with placebo, canagliflozin was associated with lower rate of heart failure hospitalizations. The effects on heart failure, which was seen in CANVAS program, this was mostly comparable to EMPIRIC outcome trial. We have seen gliflozins benefiting the patients with heart failure. Another question arises that are all SGLT2 inhibitors useful in heart failure with reduced ejection fraction? Probably no. While some authors believe that the cardiac effects of SGLT2 inhibitors are class-specific, not all SGLT2 inhibitors have been demonstrated to be beneficial in heart failure. For example, in the VERTIS-CV trial, ertugliflozin did not decrease heart failure hospitalization. What is the current status of these drugs in management of heart failure? In 2021, ACC decided to come up with their 2021 updates to the management of heart failure, and where they recommended that in the light of current evidence, SGLT2 inhibitors should be initiated in patients with heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. Three conditions had to be fulfilled: having ejection fraction of less than 40%, and patient should be in the NYHA functional class 2 to 4, and patient should be receiving good background GDMT, guideline-directed medical therapy. Two SGLT2 inhibitors are recommended for the purpose: empagliflozin and dapagliflozin. Both of them have got the same dosage, 10 milligrams once a day dose. What about the heart failure with preserved ejection fraction? There was this publication in 2019 in Circulation. It was titled "The Effects of Canagliflozin on Heart Failure Outcomes Associated with Preserved or Reduced Ejection Fraction in Type 2 Diabetes Mellitus." So the authors, they looked at the role of canagliflozin in HFpEF or heart failure with preserved ejection fraction patients who were enrolled in the CANVAS programs. Authors found that canagliflozin reduced overall risk of heart failure events in patients with type 2 diabetes mellitus and high cardiovascular risk, with no clear difference in effects on heart failure versus reduced ejection fraction versus HFpEF events. However, this may not be the perfect data, but we have some evidence of benefit in HFpEF that SGLT2 inhibitors might be useful in these patients. The two trials, EMPEROR Preserved, that is testing empagliflozin, and DELIVER trial is testing dapagliflozin. These two trials are being tested in patients with heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, and we currently await the results of these drugs. So there are certain adverse drug events we should be aware of while using SGLT2 inhibitors. We all know that SGLT2 inhibitor use is associated with increased risk of genital mycotic infections. This can lead to urinary tract infection, it can cause urosepsis, and even pyelonephritis. Necrotizing fasciitis of perineum, also known as Fournier's gangrene. This is rare, but it has been reported in both males and females. Volume depletion can be seen, so diuretics may need to be adjusted. There is a possibility that patients with diabetes mellitus can lead into diabetic ketoacidosis, because we have previously seen that empagliflozin or dapagliflozin, they can cause hyperketonemia and they can cause acidosis, elimination of bicarbonate, because of sodium hydrogen exchanger inhibition. So there is a possibility that diabetic patients may land up into diabetic ketoacidosis, and this is the reason, one of the main reasons, that these drugs have not been used in type 1 diabetes mellitus. Acute kidney injury or impairment of renal functions may be seen in some patients. In the setting of reduced oral intake of fluid losses, we should think about discontinuing the SGLT2 inhibitors for a while. And diarrhea is a new side effect which had been reported with the SGLT1 inhibitor, which was sotagliflozin. Sotagliflozin inhibits both SGLT2 and SGLT1, and diarrhea is a manifestation of SGLT1 inhibition. So there are certain contraindications which we should be aware of. This drug should be avoided in patients with type 1 diabetes mellitus, because we have talked about this. It can cause diabetic ketoacidosis. It should be avoided in patients with known hypersensitivity to the drug. And in pregnancy and lactation, the drug safety has not been studied. The drugs should be used with caution in patients with advanced renal dysfunction. This is because the DAPA-HF trial, which tested dapagliflozin, they did not include the patients of eGFR less than 30 ml per minute. And yet, dapagliflozin is approved for heart failure with reduced ejection fraction in patients with worse renal functions. Similarly, for EMPEROR Reduced trial, the lower limit of eGFR was 20 ml per minute. The trial did not test what happens to the patients who have a lower eGFR, but it is approved for patients with heart failure with reduced ejection fraction with worse renal functions. The glycosuric effects of the SGLT2 inhibitors may be attenuated in the patients with very low eGFR, and the benefits of the SGLT2 inhibitors for HFrEF management in those with more advanced renal dysfunction than the patients in these recent studies remain less clear. So they should be used with caution in patients with advanced CKD.